Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you. Encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Today on the show is a dedicated woman who wants to be remembered as a good person who helped others achieve what matters to them. Jennifer Greenberg's career experience is vast and broad and has ranged from education, nonprofit, the rare disease space, and leadership. Currently, she balances a few hats. She manages a consultancy in rare disease drug development, overseeing projects that span stakeholder groups. In addition, she is an adjunct professor at Portland State University, teaching undergraduate business strategy and consulting. She is trained in basic meditation and game storming visual facilitation. She helps leaders and their teams achieve success through her facilitation and coaching practices. Having completed an MBA in 2019, Greenberg is a lifelong learner who values connection, self-actualization, and the power of authenticity. Jennifer, thank you for joining us. It's so nice to have you here this afternoon.
Hey, Mary. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Okay, so as I mentioned in the intro, your experience is vast and broad. Tell us about your career journey and what has driven the diverse areas of interest that you have.
Yeah, that's a great question, Mary. Happenstance, right? Like, I'm definitely, you know, I think one of the things I look back and I think about my career journey and I think about how weird and random it has been and how it was a response to what was happening at that moment, what the needs, what my needs were at the moment, what my learning journey was at the moment, a little bit of what was happening in the environment around me. Mm-hmm. You know, all of a sudden you have two small kids and you have to adjust, and some luck, really. Some just, okay, look what's in front of me. I'm going to jump in. What I think has been really key though within that, because that's actually kind of a disorienting feeling, right? Mm-hmm. There are times when I've stopped and I've looked at all the different, from teaching high school and running huge events to now, you know, jumping into drug development space, nonprofit work. It looks disparate until you really sit back and say, okay, how can I thread all this together? What are the common things that have come through this? And what have I learned at each point that I can carry intentionally with me into the next spot? And without that, I think we can feel a little bit lost, especially, you know, when I was sitting there at age 45, looking back saying, well, who the hell does this make me? Mm-hmm. Right.
I love that. And that requires self-reflection, and not everyone is good at self-reflection.
Right.
What advice do you have for those who either that makes them uncomfortable or they don't know where to start?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think we sometimes just put our nose down and keep going, and we wonder how to self-reflect, right? Or the swirl of activity around us kind of takes over. And perhaps instead of self-reflection, we find ourselves caught in anxiety or worry. And self-reflection, so this is coming from somebody with a lot of, with a high drive and a good amount of anxiety. Self-reflection really comes out of a process of teaching yourself how to slow down and look, and both look analytically. Okay, so let's talk about the skills that I did learn here. Right? Let's talk about exactly what I picked up from this area of my life, whether it's your career or your whole life. And then also that centering and awareness and getting in touch with who you are on the inside and your internal state. So I think the two of those things together are really what can bring us to a point where we're understanding our journey a lot better and be ready to look toward the future.
How do you avoid the self-analyzing of not living up to what society says you should be or your paycheck should be?
That's a big one, huh? That's a big one. I'm here because of the other amazing women in my life, period. right? And when I think about who I am and who I am here in my life, I'm here because of the people who I've surrounded myself with, who have encouraged me, and who have been such kick-ass rock stars mm-hmm. in their own right. And that's it's a process, right? It's a process it really takes finding the right supports around you. One of the reasons why I was inclined to pursue leadership coaching is because we're all doing hard things where we're overcoming our inner story, mm-hmm. right? Every leader is, every team member is, every individual is. I happen to focus on leaders and leaders overcoming their hard challenges. But that's really the first step. What is it that's happening inside, and what is it that you're telling yourself? And shame really can come up really big, and it's, and I think you really have to address it. You know, I have a brilliant friend. Can I name drop?
Sure, of course.
Okay, Heather Clydesdale. She's just this. She's this amazing PhD art history expert professor who she's one of the people who's really inspired me by pursuing her PhD before I went back for my MBA. And I remember she had this little tool where she said, you know, there's this voice that I keep hearing. You can't do this. You can't finish this PhD. It's so hard. Mm-hmm. And she said, so I decided to draw it. So I drew that little character, that little naysayer, mm-hmm. and I put it on the wall and I can look at it. And so when I hear that voice, it's right there. It's that, you know, that ugly little creature that I drew. And I can see that it's outside of me, mm-hmm. you know, it's inside you, but it's also, you know, you can really
sure.
characterize it. And that's actually just a very concrete tool that I've used in a lot of times. I've taken that. It was probably 10 years ago. She said that I've taken that with me and carried it with me. Something we can all do. All right, let's name that voice. Let's give it a little drawing.
That's fantastic advice. Sometimes I even think those little voices or talk tracks come out in our dreams.
Yeah.
In fact, I had one the other day, and I was behaving in a way that I know is not who I want to be.
In your dream or in real life?
My dream. And so I had the awareness to like say, ooh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be a whole nother show we could, you know, analyze.
Well, but dreams. It's an important, you know, but that's important. And it's interesting that you were able to, like, I'm curious, what was it about the self-awareness in your dream that felt important to you?
Oh, I think, and this is going to sound crazy, and I'm just going to say it, and I don't know who all listens to this, but it was like literally. Okay, I'm going to really be vulnerable here. I had just watched a Brad Pitt movie and was dreaming about Brad Pitt. And somehow I was like wanting him so much to like me. And then I lost, like, no, he would be lucky to know me. Instead, you know, just shifting that, oh, please, you know, see me in the way I want you to see me. Instead of being who I am to kind of draw or attract.
Yeah. So the dream was, it sounds like you had a shift in your dream where you realized that it's not about chasing after, so to speak, what other people think, but just I'm fully present and worthy in how I'm showing up.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt.
And we had just watched Moneyball earlier, so that's only why I'm happily married. Oh,
who doesn't dream about Brad Pitt? Come on.
Oh, God. But no, I think as a younger woman, I did play that role.
Right.
And now who I am today, I'm not that same young woman.
Right. Right. How have you gotten to that point? Like, what are your, when you look at what's the recipe in your life where you've gotten to that point where you're like, I'm so much closer to who I want to be now, who I imagine my best self could be. Like, what got you there, Mary?
I would say self-discovery, constant growth mindset, you know, interviewing amazing women like you, starting this podcast, broadening who's in my life, who are my role models, what their learning, you know, what their learnings are, and really being open to what outwardly things I'm saying, is that true to who I think I am? And to self-correct those tracks, internal or external, when I hear them happening.
That can be hard to do, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the self-correction. It's so ingrained. It can be so ingrained in us to, it can be so ingrained in us as women to, whether it's demur or not acknowledge our feeling or please somebody else. I mean, there's a host of habits that come out that are ingrained that I think can either bring us closer to who we really want to be, right? Mm-hmm. Or pull us away from. Yeah, it's interesting. It sounds like, you know, what I hear you say resonates in that kind of that constant checking in on that, both that internal state, but then being able to be a bit of a fly on the wall and watch yourself and say, I showed up how I want to show up.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. We're going to circle back to the,
I don't get to interview you.
I'm getting all red. Okay. You teach undergrad business.
Yeah. In a world. I love it.
I mean, that sounds amazing. But the world today requires an enormous amount of resiliency for all of us. But, you know, you're looking at undergraduate. What are you teaching them and what have students taught you about resilience?
Yeah, it's just such an important question. And it goes back to, I think that naming it, right? Where are we right now? That ever important job of naming our current state and both our internal current state, how you're feeling on the inside, but also our external current state. And there's business tools for that. As a matter of fact, I ran a workshop for individuals who are wanting to use business tools to better understand their life path. And you start by what's happening around me right now, right? Mm-hmm. And so in business, we look a lot in the strategy class I teach or the organizational behavior class I just taught, we look a lot at what's happening in our environment. So right now, I mean, we got COVID, we have supply chain issues, we have, you know, we've had this disruption, we've had social change, and that can feel very overwhelming to people. As a matter of fact, I like to connect with my students about what they're actually experiencing in their life and in their job life, and then relate it back to both our external environment and just name what's happening right now as we all move forward. And so one little way that we can do this is say, look how amazing this is. Like, let's reframe it a little bit, right? Look how amazing this is that you are living through change.
Right.
You know, Roger Martin, business guru, said that this is the most disruptive period of consumer behavior since World War II. Mm-hmm. Our behaviors are changing. And that's huge. And so for students to realize that they're in the midst of that, and yeah, that's going to feel weird and destabilizing, but I think naming it and seeing it and seeing that you're moving through it is what builds resilience. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of doing those, like, I mean, I hate stomach crunches or whatever, right? Not a big fan. But when I'm the rare chance I'm doing them, I know that I'm getting stronger. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like it. It feels more like this sucks, but I'm actually getting stronger. And so recognizing that and naming that is a big part of that process. I remember talking to somebody who was a financial evaluator in the middle of the dot-com boom. She was young. Young person at the time, young woman in a male industry in the middle of Silicon Valley. And they're all looking at each other saying, what is going on? And then to look back and say, wow, I lived through that.
Right.
And so I think that in some way, we're all in that moment right now. And I like to remind my students of that.
Yeah, no, I definitely think I appreciate living through this versus looking on the outside and reading it in a book, because while hard and definitely some sad losses, the positive that you can take away from just the change and the self-discovery through being uncomfortable is really incredible. And to see the awakening really across the country, across the world, especially in the US, around working and what people will accept and, you know, how they're redefining balance in their life. That is so beautiful.
Right. It's powerful. We have a real shift of social constraints and the constraints we put on ourselves. And we have people, you're right, exactly, across the country saying, I'm not doing this anymore. This is not worth it. And on the other hand, we have a situation where we're really questioning the legitimacy of the corporation. And that could be good, but that's also destabilizing because we're built upon, that's our foundation as a structure, right? In this country. So a lot of moving parts, a lot of intellectually interesting things, and then but then also recognizing that those moving parts, those changes can really affect us. And how do we take care of ourselves and see ourselves as gaining strength in the midst of it all?
Mm-hmm. You provide leadership coaching. What is your methodology for goal setting and problem solving?
Yeah, goal setting. Well, my methodology is really, so coaching is a process of standing next to somebody looking out at the horizon. And as I've increased the amount of my time that I'm coaching, I'm realizing it's crucial to take off the consulting hat because I also do a lot of consulting. And so in coaching, that consulting hat comes off and you're shifting from somebody who's telling to somebody who's listening and asking. Mm. And that can be really hard as somebody who loves telling, right? But it's where the power comes from for the person who's being coached, right? Because they're in charge. They're setting the direction. So in terms of methodology, I think it's simple. It's being very open about the fact that we're trying to get somewhere. We're trying to define where we're trying to get. And we're going to ask a lot of questions and investigate that.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk about your guided workshops. In kind of doing some homework here, I looked at your website and you have designing your future, pathfinding for project teams, alignment across organizations, leadership voice, and collab lab. Tell us a little bit about each, and is there like a reoccurring theme?
Yeah. So I think as opposed to going into details on each, I'll just kind of give an overarching. Yeah. So a big part of the work that I've done as I sat back and I said, okay, what are all these disparate things that I've done over the course of my career? It really all started, my foundation was in leading wilderness trips back in my young 20s. Mm. And I wouldn't be the same had I not done that. And I think everything that I've taken away from every position and every job and every activity and every piece of work that I've done since then has really, I can look back and say, oh yeah, I can see how this was like that. Those wilderness trips where you're taking a group from point A way over there to point B, and in between there's lakes and mosquitoes and rocks and personal hardship and the need to pull together as a team and the need to really be your strongest and best, but also be your most open. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, all of these workshops, which are all custom to the audience, so they can borrow bits and pieces from each other. They all go back to that. Okay, what is it that we need to be aware of and know how to do in order to really succeed in what we have in front of us? I teach a lot about how teams, collaboration and teams is something that I focus on very much in all of these workshops and with the leaders that I work with. But think about how teams need a purpose. They need a direction. They need a very clearly defined purpose. Great teams need norms. They need ways that they agree to behave together. Mm-hmm. They need metrics. How are we going to measure success? What does it look like? What does it look like from a business perspective, right? Like, what numbers do we have to hit? Mm-hmm. Great teams need communication, and they need communication skills that flow both between each other, but also the outside world, both the market around us and our other key stakeholders. you know, everybody else that this mm-hmm. project, that this effort touches. And great teams need continuous improvement. That's the fifth ingredient, continuous improvement. And so teams need to know how to keep getting better. And that's an active pursuit. Mm-hmm. So in all of these workshops, depending on who comes to them and what their needs are, these are the kinds of ingredients that feed into it. Whether it's multiple stakeholders that we're aligning toward a shared purpose, or whether it's a project team that's kicking off and needs to be able to do something really, really hard and really big, let's define how we're going to get there and what that looks like.
That sounds fascinating. Let's talk about emotional intelligence. How do you define it, and why is it important to understand what it is and how to build and practice it?
Yeah. So emotional intelligence, I kind of go with a classic definition that's mm-hmm. like a Goleman definition mm-hmm. of emotional intelligence that really has to do with how in touch you are with yourself, and then how in touch you are with your influence on others and managing others. And within that, it can get really nuanced, right? There's a lot of different aspects of that, a lot of different skills that we draw upon. But at its most, as root, it's knowing ourselves mm-hmm. inside, knowing our internal state. How do you feel on the inside? It's a cheesy question, but mm-hmm. it's a great one to notice and ask.
Right.
Knowing that, and then taking that to your physical state. You know, I was sitting the other day and I was realizing as I was talking to somebody, my hand was clenched. I thought, oh, interesting. My hand is clenched. Okay, let's loosen that up a little bit. And, you know, what's that about, right? And being a little curious about that. Not self-judgy, right? Mm-hmm. But curious. and then how you're coming across, right? How others see you. And then starting to be able to model others as well. It's that reading the room. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of nuanced skills that you can build within that. And it takes time. I remember once I was sitting and having a glass of wine with a friend of mine, and we were at some wine shop, and it was a new friendship. And I was so excited because I was making a new friend, and we were talking. And I was like, Jennifer, you're talking a lot. Like, I thought this inside myself. Mm-hmm. It was sort of like your, your dream. Like, hey. And I thought, okay, noted. I think I'll stop talking, ask a question, and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's how a habit changes, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to be more effective. I want to do this differently. Let's name the little thing that you can change. Let's not beat ourselves up when we catch ourselves doing it.
Right.
And then practice, try it out.
I love it. How do you define success?
Oh man, that's a hard one, right?
Well, it's what other people think. That's how we're conditioned.
Totally. But it's hard to get away with that, from that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I could be really dishonest and be like, it's that internal sense of whatever, but I don't know. Here's the hard part. You've probably done different assessments like the Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinders or right. So in both StrengthsFinders and recently I did an Enneagram, like Achiever came up as two of the top ones. And I'm like, oh, I think that might be biting me in the butt sometimes. So let's go back to self-awareness, right?
Right.
How do we define success? Because mm-hmm. if we're not careful, we will use so many external measures. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember a great talk that Tashelle Sorensen, who's the director of the Portland State MBA program. And when I talk about, you know, just learning from other people, she is absolutely somebody who I've watched and learned from. A great deal of our learning is from watching others, right? And watching how they lead. And she's somebody I've learned a tremendous amount from in that way, and also through conversations with her. She's awesome. She stood up in front of one of our classes. I think we were talking about, it means something different, like legal things or something. I don't know. And she said, you know, in MBA land, and she said, you know, it's really important to understand your measuring stick. And she said, you know, everybody has a different measuring stick, and just understanding and knowing what it is important. And for some of us, it might be money, right? It might be dollars per hour. And I don't think we need to get down on ourselves about that.
I agree.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. But I love this whole conversation keeps kind of circling back around self-awareness. Mm. And I just love that we're having this conversation, because I think it's so important for people to be self-aware in order to grow.
Right.
And but like you said, where does it,
yeah. But where you said, like you said, where does it start? Right. Mm-hmm. Where does it start? And that's the challenge. What in your, like, how have you, as you've become part of your, like, more into yourself at this stage in your life, like, how has your self-awareness increased? Like, have you looked for, like, do you have tools that you've used?
I think I'm just constantly asking questions, watching leadership, like consciously watching leadership, you know, seeking out TED Talks, just surrounding yourself with things that you're attracted to, not necessarily the person, but maybe some things that they represent or something that they do that sits well or brings a smile or says, yeah, I'd like to emulate that, but not in a jealous way, but more of a how to give more to the world of that essence.
Yeah, seeing how other people do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What drives you?
Self-actualization. I mean, I think that, you know, I always joke that if I had a, you know, a tattoo on my shoulder, it'd be Maslow's hierarchy. but it's a real thing, right? Like, how can we reach our full potential? That saying of there's the 2 days in your life, the day that you're born and the day you find out why.
Now really, that's powerful.
Really resonates with me, right? Like, why are we here? What is my why? I don't know what my why is entirely, but as I grow and grow older, I think I'm starting to see it more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drives me, is that quest.
Mm-hmm.
There's no end point, right? It's a journey.
Right.
But that quest to know.
You know, many of who listen into this podcast are women and career-minded women. Where do you see the most significant opportunities for women in business today?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting question, because when you said that, I'm like listening to my own internal constructs as you say that, and I will tell you my gut response, and my gut response is in full an open partnership with other women and with men.
Hmm. Yeah.
We all have to do this together. I have been very purposeful in seeking out male mentors in my life. I've worked with amazing, strong women, amazing, who have learned tremendous things from, like you said, by watching and observing and look what works and, and making sure that I'm maintaining like healthy relationships with women.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we need to also know how to work with men in a way that makes us all better and stronger and more capable. And that's within reach. Do you follow, have you read the works of Deborah Tannen at any time in your
life, I have Mary? Not, no.
I mean, it's funny. I think I was first reading Deborah Tannen in like the late 1980s. She's a linguist. Mm. She's a linguist who talks about the gender differences in language and in speech. And she was talking about it and writing a lot about it in a time when there wasn't as much gender fluidity, when really it was, our mindset was that there was the male and the female. And what we know now is that there is more fluidity and that different people have different, you know, places on the spectrum where they are in that. And so that's, you know, I say that with respect and understanding of that. And also at the same time, there's some very like statistically significant male behavior traits around linguistics and conversations and how we relate to each other in the workplace and female traits.
Mm-hmm.
And Deborah Tannen, reading Deborah Tannen early, really opened my eyes to how sometimes our languages just cross. Mm-hmm. One of the things that she talks about, for example, that I think is very relevant, and other leaders have also talked about this and written about this in different formats. I keep coming across this idea of on an axis up and down is hierarchy or power. And on the side to side, horizontal, is affinity or connection or intimacy, right? Let's think of its connection. So this power hierarchy versus this this other axis of connection. And the most resonant leaders are ones who know how to work both axes. Mm-hmm. So that they are building strong connections with the people around them, meaningful, real connections, but they also know how to exhibit a sense of power, right? Mm-hmm. A sense of command, so to speak. So men and women orient differently on these axes. Men tend to orient on the hierarchy, the up and down, right? The hierarchy and power. And that's what they're paying attention to. As you watch two little boys play with each other, I don't know, I have two boys and I was always amused by this. You know, they'd each have a car in their hand and one would say, my car is faster than your car. My car can jump over your car, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my Lord, you two kids. come on. But then you turn to little girls, and Deborah Tannen backs this up with studies that she's done. And, you know, My doll has a blue dress. Mine dress is blue too, right? And we're looking for that connection and the commonalities. Mm. And we're, whether it's nurture, whether it's nature, doesn't matter. It is what we see happening both with when two women get together, finding commonalities, when two men tend to find some kind of hierarchy. Mm. Neither is right. Neither is wrong. Mm-hmm. But awareness of it and knowing how to work within it is what gives us a step forward in our careers and in our relationships with each other in the workplace, both with men and women.
Love it. When you reflect on your career, what are you most proud of?
Oh, I'm so proud of leading those wilderness trips. It was really hard. I was really young. And I remember laying in the tent at night, just worrying about everything and getting, you know, worrying about getting hit by lightning and worrying about, you know, these youth that I was with being okay. No, I mean, I really am. And I think and I look back at the hard thing. I think I look at when I was 19, teaching high school, working with at-risk youth, kind of putting myself in a very, in a position of both care and power. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I also think about tackling an MBA in my mid to late 40s. Mm-hmm. Went in there a little bit of an identity crisis at first. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I went, but the first class, the first night, I'm in there with all these really amazing, impressive people who are working at Nike and Intel and in nonprofits. And most of them are younger than I am. Right? Mm-hmm. And I forget my dinner in the car and I go back to my car and I open the trunk and my kid's soccer ball falls out and starts bouncing across the parking lot. And like the two sides of me, this like putting on this new MBA hat and then the soccer mom like came just clashing, you know, glaring in front of me. And, so getting over that, right? Getting over that kind of stepping into a new place in identity. So there's a lot of things that I'm really proud of, and more so, I'm really happy that now, and I don't know that happy is the right word, but I feel honored that my next step is working with hard leaders who are doing hard things and helping them as they face their challenges, because what they're doing, I'm in awe of my clients and what they are doing is hard and important and personally meaningful, and being able to be there with them as they look out on their horizon and they figure out their steps to get there is truly, truly one of the greatest honors of my work life.
What does to be bolder mean to you?
I remember when I was first doing like a values activity and, you know, where you choose, like, it's a great activity. You can look at your values and sort out a bunch of words. And and boldness came up. Hmm. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, interesting. This one's really speaking to me, but I'm not that bold. Like, don't tell anyone, but right. And I pegged it as an aspirational value. Mm-hmm. And so to be bold in a measured way, right? Like, we put on our parachute before we jump out of the plane.
Right. We should, at least.
It's highly recommended. So to step into your own self and to step into your old boldness and to realize that it takes courage and readiness and measure, mm-hmm. I think is really important in how we keep growing and moving forward.
This conversation has been so enjoyable. Is there anything that you had hoped people would walk away from today in our conversation that maybe we haven't covered that you wanted to have any final thoughts?
So when I'm scrolling LinkedIn, I notice that instead of feeling excited and proud and like on board with all these great announcements people are making, all these wonderful, I start to feel a little jealous inside. And I've noticed that as I'm scrolling LinkedIn, no matter what kind of self-reflection I'm doing, that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real thing. So I turn off LinkedIn. I don't scroll through it, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's an important communication tool, but I'm noticing my internal reaction. So I say it's really important to listen to that internal reaction and then go find mentors who ignite you and surround yourself with powerful women who are doing amazing things who also lift you.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think that is the key. It's not about what we're doing in comparison to somebody else. It's not about the awards that we rack up, although there's a good case for sharing that information with other people. Mm-hmm. But it's about surrounding yourself with the right people who can, you know, who are all climbing the mountain with you.
Jennifer, it has been an extreme pleasure. I enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for being a guest and sharing your career story.
I feel so grateful for having been here. Thank you so much, Mary, for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bboulder.com. That's the number 2, little b, boulder.com.